In the dark, I fed my dream.
Welcome to episode 433 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes.
Permaculture PIMP, with soulful grace, in the PIMP Pimpcast, where we find a place.
Well, good to be here with y'all on this Thursday. Wow, so much going on in the world, so many crazy things. But this episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. Get it on your calendars, folks. TPC will get you 5% off, and I think you're going to dig it. And if you want to be there live, we got that. If you want to be there virtually, we got you covered too. Also, had her on last night, Nessa's Hemp. It was actually a really, really good video. But sadly, a lot of the people on YouTube were not able to see it. So it's exclusively on Rumble if you want to see the video, or you can listen to the audio podcast and you can catch it there. I think she knocked it out of the park, and there's a whole, folks, put her in your prayers. I mean, in a big way. I don't know that I got liberty to go through all that she's going through right now in terms of what they are actively doing to her. She didn't mention any of it in the podcast, but believe me, folks, it's extraordinary what they are trying to do to keep this information away from you and me and everybody else out there. So Nessa's Hemp, 10% off with promo code PERMA. We talked about the endocannabinoid system. And we couldn't do it on YouTube because I am currently, at least Perma Pastures Farm channel, and I think the Permaculture Pimpcast channel is right now on a 7-day suspension again. Because we had the audacity to mention the word C that ends in er. I'll leave it to your imagination to figure out what I'm talking about there. So, yeah, we mentioned that, and then we got in trouble. What do you think, son?
Yeah, it checks out. I mean, they definitely don't want any, like, alternative healing modalities being mentioned on YouTube. Even if it still follows their guidelines and their recommended ways of saying these things. And now the Permaculture Pimpcast channel, that has had some permanent restrictions put on that. There was they said something about advanced settings being permanently removed. There's a lot of like permanent damage done to the Permaculture Pimpcast channel. It might become one of those channels that you have to type in every single letter in the name in order to even find it. So y'all definitely check us out on the Rumble channel for sure. So that way you just can keep, and then also the audio is always going to be available. So you can find this on every audio platform, every podcast player. So if you don't see it on video and you haven't seen this for a while on video, check out the audio and you can catch up there.
Well, some of the most important content that we're going to do is probably, I mean, things that are never going to be suitable to their so-called guidelines here. So anyway, we can't put out anything on the Permaculture Pimpcast channel. It's a shame because, Michelle is out there right now, and ordinarily I'd be helping her, but I just noticed it myself. I was down there doing some work, and I'm like, whoa, look at that. That peach tree is not just growing peaches, man. It's got a massive bee swarm on it. And at a time where everybody around us is losing bees left and right, y'all, we're capturing swarms like it's going out of style. So this is the first one this year. Hopefully we got more to come. Anyway, we capture the swarms, and we'll put them in a box. So, you know, we'll hang on to these guys, and in the morning we'll move them over where they're supposed to be, and hopefully they stay. So it's always about a 50-50 chance that they're going to diddy mow on you or whether or not they're going to stay. So anyway, the cool thing also, folks, now that I brought up bees, let me just talk about something else, especially in these times. I think it's especially important. So we learned, William and I learned when we were at the Healing for the Ages conference, Dr. Schmidt, who was talking about all things bees and how, you know, everything from the pollen and everything else can really, really help you in a big way. I ran out of bee pollen that I collected from my hives maybe 3 months ago. So I'll be putting the pollen traps back on there to be able to catch more of them and more more pollen. I mean, that is, folks. William, I don't know if you remember or not, but do you remember what Dr. Schmidt, Dr. Janice Schmidt, said about bee pollen and what it's good for?
Dad, I don't even know if we can mention that on YouTube, Dad. Like, even something as basic as that, I don't think we can even mention that. Even though it's like known information, it's so, there aren't hard and fast rules on YouTube, and they also don't tell you exactly what the rules are. It's basically whatever they feel like in the moment, and right now they're for sure paying attention. It also seems odd to me that the Permapasture's Farm channel and the Pimpcast channel both got strikes, but mine didn't, as if they can't do them all at the same time. Like, I noticed it, and also the reason I removed it from my channel once I got the notification that the Pimpcast channel got a strike. How did they not catch it all at the same time? Because it streamed all to the same channels. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying, but I'll say it this way. Dr. Schmidt basically explained that if you're capturing pollen from your bees or bees that are very local to you, you could look at it as the ultimate multivitamin. Maybe I can say it that way. The ultimate multivitamin. And I would look into it because it made perfect sense to me. So that's one cool way to be able to capture your swarm. So anyway, yeah, hopefully this information gets out there. I'm going to be capturing a whole bunch of it this year. I didn't get enough last year. Well, frankly, I gave away too much and didn't keep enough around for myself. But yeah, good stuff. Uh-oh, Permaculture Orchard Podcast in the house. So my man, Stephen Subkowiak, y'all, William just did an interview with them. Go check them out. Look, I've been thinking a lot about him lately because we're doing a lot of tree work right now. And good night, folks. I mean, we are just, if we don't get another crazy late freeze, we ought to have unbelievable amounts of fruits. And I was actually going to bring him up today. So since he's in the house, I'll go ahead and say it now. Folks, something I learned directly from Stephen. And folks, go check them out. You're going to be glad. Any training that he offers, get it done. It's worth every cent. In fact, I think it's grossly underpriced for what you get out of it. Prime example, the reason why we grow early, mid, and late of everything we can out there is because of what we experienced. We had all this warm weather, and then, oh my goodness, the tree that produced 400 pounds of peaches last year looked like it was going to produce 6 this year. Bam, got hit with a frost that we couldn't do anything about. Well, that one's down for the count for the year, but we got mid and late season peaches that are doing just fine. And it looks like we got another little cold snap coming up, but not enough to really knock down what we had there. Folks, these are the things you're going to learn by getting yourself educated. Look, we live in crazy, crazy times right now. Weird times. In fact, we're going to talk about some of it today. And when you live in those kind of times, man, this is why the tagline of our show is stay alert, stay alive. So if you're like all of the monocrop orchards that we have in Hendersonville, just south of here, where they do all the apples and stuff, you'll find out one of my favorite apples out there is called a Evercrisp. Now, I got some right here growing on the mountain now. But anyway, those apples down there was a year they didn't have any of them. Why? Because it got hit with a late frost. Well, would you rather have a little bit of something than a whole lot of nothing? And that's exactly what you have when you plant a monocrop. So folks, think early, mid, and late. And that is just one tiny bit of what you're going to learn tuning into the Permaculture Orchard Podcast, and go to the Stephen Subkowiak on YouTube, because you are going to learn so much, folks. I mean, he's taught me more than probably 10 schoolmasters put together. I'm not kidding, y'all. And it's been one of the best investments I've ever made. You know, first of all, getting the Permaculture Orchard Beyond Organic video that was out there. I watched that thing more than any other video that I've ever had in my life, memorized most of it. And then every bit of training that he's put out there, I've been on top of it. I still got to finish his latest one now. But folks, he makes learning fun, easily accessible. And at the end of the day, you just feel unbelievably empowered. So 99% of what I know about here, folks, I'm getting it from him. And I try to give him attribution as often as possible. So go check him out, folks. You're going to be glad you did. Look, our largest audience by far is definitely in the audio stream. So we're going to link his information down below. And be sure to go check it out, folks. In these times, I'm telling you, investing in your education is the best thing you can do. All right. So, so Michelle's down there, in fact, getting the bee swarm off of the peach tree. That is one of the peaches that has actually made it through. So, I mean, you talk about stacking functions, man. These bees are like, hey, man, I know you guys are producing fruit over there, but let's go ahead and give you another swarm so you can start making honey. So, getting those guys out there, that's the first swarm. And everybody else, sadly, for miles around here, nobody has bees, but we do. Not saying that to brag. I'm saying that is when you bring the right dogs to the hunt, that even with the toxicity that we're around, even though all these other things exist, when you have something that's a little bit better than your neighbors, your animals, the wildlife is going to favor your place. So consider that. All right. Other things we got going on around here. Told you guys that I was going to do it last podcast, and I'm actually doing it. And that's growing. I got rows of carrots out there in my beds, and I've also intermixed in between them some microgreens. So why would I do that? Well, number one, the microgreens are going to pop out. I put them in yesterday, and some of them are already popping up. Cool thing about those microgreens, I eat a salad every single morning. I mean, that's exactly what I eat for breakfast every single day, and it's sourced from our high tunnel when it's cold and from the beds when it's not, the beds that are outside when it's not. So I told you, hey, man, instead of just growing those carrots in there, what can I do with the space in between? Because the microgreens, while the carrots are still growing, when they get a little bit bigger, they'll provide a little bit of marginal shade for the carrots that are coming up. But also, those are things I can put in my salad every single day. And because I got some seriously punchy soil out there, it's in those beds, and now I'm hitting it weekly with either soil saviors or some of my own compost extract. I mean, I don't care what anybody's selling at the farmer's market. It's not made especially for me, which this is, because it's very, very, very local to me. So got that done. Met with my man, Steve, the blacksmith. I don't think he'd appreciate me putting his name out. Certainly his wife. Met him for lunch the other day. And folks, I can't remember the last time I did this. And it was weird at first because I never take breaks this time of year. But it was such a joy to be around Steve. And he's just one of those guys that's eternally positive. And you just feel better being in the company of somebody that's, first of all, he's just wicked smart. Gave me a whole list of all these apples that grow locally. He found it in an old, I guess, microfiche or something, of all these apples that used to be local around here that he's searching for. And I told him a place where he might be able to find them. And Steve, I'll have to check that old Southern Apples book and see if I can't. I got a screenshot of what he had there. I'm going to see if I can't find them and see if we can't grow them around here, because we do have apples over by the college that are like ancient. Nobody even really knows their origin, but they are pre-Civil War. So I'll be making sure I get some. Another thing I learned from Stephen, how to graft and how easy it is. So the gardener over at that college already told me that she was completely fine with me taking some Scion wood over there. So I'll be sure to do that and see if I can't grow. And what's so special about these trees, son? Do you remember what was so special about those apples?
Oh, the amount of fruit that they put on. They were full-size apples that had a ton of fruit on them. They were massive.
They were good apples. They weren't awesome. They were really, really good. And one thing I learned about Stefan being in his place is that when you grow these guys, you start to become picky about the ones you do eat. And so I have. But the cool thing about these guys is that they are growing around a ton of cedars, and there's no cedar rust at all. So you think that might be an apple that might be a great benefit to people that are in those environments? I mean, these guys are completely resistant to it, very, very abundant. And kids at this college are walking past these apples to go eat garbage in the chow hall that they have over there. So, anyway, got to hang out with Steve. He broke out these apples. As soon as I get 2 minutes to rub together, I'm going to be looking them up. And then when we were leaving there, man, you could have knocked me over with a feather when he says, hey, man, I got something for you over in the truck. His wife, I better not mention her name. I know she's probably out there milking that she's listening to this right now. He said, man, she gave you a little care package over here. Good night, man. A gallon of milk that they produce, I mean, that they actually, you know, get themselves. It's their cows. And then all this cheese, man. Good night. I guess she figured out that I was talking about her the other day as far as the dairy I eat. Man, she gave me this Kellogg's variety pack of cheese that she made. And I still haven't had a chance to get into it, but you better believe this weekend will not pass until I do. So, I mean, the cheese and then the butter, which I'm going to cook up some eggs tomorrow morning. I meant to do it this morning, but I thought about it. I was like, man, I need to cook these eggs in that butter. I already have butter in the pan from other stuff. So can't wait to get that done. And man, she must really like us, man. Well, see, here's the cool thing, folks. I give them honey and, you know, I don't expect anything in return because, as you know, son, what do we give you guys? A 5-gallon bucket of honey to take home?
Yep. 5-gallon honey. And you guys don't really consume a whole lot of honey either.
No. Yeah. I actually consume the pollen, which is a great blessing and a benefit to me. Honey, I do very, very sparingly. I try to stay in as little sugar as I can, even if it's coming from honey these days. But yeah, anyway, I hooked them up with honey, and man, they were so cool to hook me up with all that dairy. Hey, and speaking of which, here's a little trick once again that I learned from Stefan. He was using whey, as I recall, but you can do the same thing with milk, and I've been doing it for years. I've been going to these folks that live down the road from me, and I would get a gallon of milk, and then you cut it 50-50. You want to make sure you get the cream off the top, but you can cut it 50-50 with water that's purified, very good water, and you can spray down your trees. And the cool thing about it is that the beneficial bacteria that's in that milk is going to take up all the sites. You can also do this with compost extract. There's a little trick also from the late, great Dr. Elaine Ingham, is that you could take compost tea. There is a difference between making compost tea and compost extract. The compost tea, Sam, why don't you explain that real quick while I get a drink?
The difference between compost tea and compost extract is you're just quickly knocking off the organisms of the organic matter and then suspending them in water. Compost tea, you're going to knock off those organisms from the organic matter, suspend it in water, and then keep it aerated and fed long enough so the organisms can develop glues. So that way, when you spray them on the surface of like leaves, for example, they'll actually stick there. But it's very, very difficult. Like, I've seen a bunch of YouTube tea or compost tea recipes on YouTube. The downside is that nobody really has an access to the microscope to see if they're actually making a good product or a bad product. And it can go from good to bad and the amount of time it takes for you to check under the microscope. So that's the issue. So if anybody's like showing you like compost tea extracts, just keep in mind, they don't actually have a way to verify whether or not they're putting good or bad guys on the surface of their plants. That's one benefit of the extract, is that it's foolproof and you can't mess it up. And another thing with teas, another thing that makes it so difficult, is that there's not one unified recipe for compost tea, because what I can feed my organisms to get them to grow in the amount of time that I need them to grow in my compost tea is not the same amount of food or quantity of food or even variety of food that Dad would be able to use in North Carolina. So there's a huge trial and error and testing process before you can even make consistently good compost tea for yourself.
And that's why I'm saying Stefan's method of doing this is far superior in this particular area. And here's why. Because of the difficulty, if you don't have a microscope, you're not making proper compost tea. Bottom line, I don't care what anybody tells you. If you don't have a microscope, and you got to have those organisms at the point where they are reproducing, because they make those glues. Okay, you can go out there and spray your trees with that, or you can make take your milk, put it in a pump sprayer, take the cream off the top, mix it 50-50 with water, shake it up, and then go out there on a very sunny day and go down and spray those leaves on both sides if you can possibly do it. And like Stefan said in his first video, if I'm quoting him right, it's like, hey, the cool thing about this method is you're not killing anything. You're just taking up, you're doing what you would ordinarily do with a compost tea. Your beneficial guys are taking up all those sites on those leaves where any of the bad guys may want to get in there. So that is the beauty of using that method. And honestly, folks, I've seen trees turn around that were starting to get some insect damage out there, and then all of a sudden put that on there. But if you can do it early on in the season, at least from my standpoint, that has always worked the best for me. As soon as those leaves are on, you want to try to get that out there. And now your good guys are absolutely taking over everything out there, but you want to do it on a sunny day. And yeah, those are few and far to come by these days. But anyway, that is one cool milk hack. And so, I better not say his wife's name, but Steve and the missus, you got plenty of milk out there. I know you got a bunch of trees out there. Try it. I guarantee it works like nobody's business. There's also some other milk tricks you can do out there, but I'm not going to get into those right now. Other things we got going around here. So I got my sheep on the side of the mountain and they're working around my trees right now. If I would do a video about it, if I weren't kicked off of YouTube, but just take my word for it, they're cleaning up the side of this mountain. And the cool thing is that ultimately what I plan to do is have an orchard all the way up this mountain with a bunch of switchbacks to take you there. So that's where these guys are working right now. Let's see some other things we're doing. And it's things we do anyway, but I never talk about them, but I'm just going to tell you anyway. So right now we got, because around every tree we have rosemary, thyme, and oregano around every tree. Well, folks, that's also our medicine around here. And I'll take it, put it in the freeze dryer, the harvest right. And by the way, if you need one, we got a link for that. It helps us a great deal if you end up getting one. You could dry it, I'm sure, but when you freeze dry, you capture 90-some percent of the nutrients that are in there. So rosemary, thyme, oregano, what do you do with the sick chicken? You give them rosemary. Every single day I drink bone broth, so does Michelle. I put rosemary, thyme, and oregano, stuff that's local to us that we put in there. Let food be thy medicine, okay? That's exactly how we roll. I've taken way too much time, son, but go ahead. It's your turn.
Well, good thing you did, because my day hasn't consisted of a whole lot of different things. This morning did an interview with the Permaculture Orchard podcast, Stefan and his son Zach, and it was awesome. We spent more time talking outside of the interview than we did actually in the interview, and they gave me a whole boatload of wisdom as far as doing consultations, because Stefan's been doing consultations for 15 years. How to do them better, how to do them more efficiently, things like that. And then his son was talking to me about how to do YouTube better. It's something that he said he's like geeked out over and things like that. And they were shocked whenever I was saying I put a video out about every other day. They're like, that's wild. Which they're putting out a video like once a month, and they've maintained the same amount of views as if they were doing it once a week. So I'm going to take, and then also how to come up with better titles, better format for videos, things like that. And then thumbnails as well. And then other than that, just focusing on getting these moringa seeds out to y'all. Like, we have flown through some moringa seeds, and we don't totally have a solid workflow figured out yet. So it takes a little bit of time, and the ladies at the post office ain't too happy with me right now, because Etsy won't let me print out the USPS scan form, which is basically, instead of scanning every individual package, you scan this one little form and then it counts everything that has a label on it. And then you only have to scan one for like 100 packages. Etsy won't let me do that. So the ladies at the post office are having to scan every individual package by themselves. And for those of you that are interested in that podcast interview, it's going to come out tomorrow. I'll do a collaboration with them. So it'll be on my channel. It'll be on the Permaculture Orchard channel, Stefan's channel, and then the Permaculture Orchard podcast channel as well. But definitely go check it out on the Permaculture Orchard podcast channel. They have some awesome, awesome interviews over there. And they're about to, just with who I just recently put them in contact with, it's going to be pretty cool who they interview in the future. And it's going to be exciting. So, yeah. And then that brings me up to current time right now doing this podcast. I've been in front of this camera for a while today.
Well, good thing you got your blue light blockers on. Yeah, it was such a joy to have Stefan and his son here. I was trying to have them take a contraband bike back to Canada. they'll know what I'm talking about. It's still in the box, boys. So next time you come down, you're more than welcome to take it back. Just bring a little bike rack with you. So honestly, man, it's kind of awesome when you're in the presence of both of them, because the cool thing is they have their own brand of genius. They really do. And Zach is a flipping genius with all things tech. I mean, he's telling me stuff, man, that it's kind of over my head, but I understand enough to really appreciate what he does. They don't put out a whole lot of videos, but what they put out is absolutely top-notch quality. And I think I probably, maybe this is a blessing in disguise, try to put out one or two videos a week. But as of late, I mean, man, I'm just... I'm just trying to get the information out there because I know what's about to befall this country. And that's exactly why I've been talking about so much of this stuff. I'll cover that in a little bit, but mountain readiness, remember, May 1 through 3, May 1st through the 3rd, William and I are going to be out there and a number of others as well. We're going to show you how to process a sheep from start to finish. I mean, not like a lot of these other festivals where you go up out there. I've always hated doing it that way. And I've kind of, anybody that wants me to do it now, if I'm not showing it from start to finish, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to go out there with a side of pork or beef or whatever and then break it down there because it's just, it's useless. If you don't know how to properly dispatch that animal, know how to properly gut and skin that animal, what good is it showing you how to break it down into primals or subprimals or cuts? You can't even get there unless you know about the other things. But William and I are going to be showing you how to do all of it. And there's a lot of other people out there as well. Folks, you need. I know a lot of people are kind of staying put. But if you can work it out, get your butt over there to Mountain Readiness. There's a lot of awesome instructors out there. I mean, guys, you got Navy SEALs, you got sappers like me, you got Rangers, you got Delta Force, you got Special Forces, you know, Green Berets, you got them all out there. I mean, and they're not, it's not like a sausage party where it's a guy fest. It's nothing like that. It's really meant all the way around for everybody, women, kids, you name it. This thing is off the chain. So go check it out May 1st through the 3rd. Also, Micronic Silver, been using a lot of that with all the spraying they've been doing. So Perma will get you 10% off over there. And then don't forget Wave Watch. You get $100 off with Billy 100. Yeah, William's got his on, but I wear mine pretty much only when I go to town. Any place where I might be around some frequencies I don't want to be around or, you know, some tough to deal with kind of people. So anyway, Billy 100 will get you squared away. And if you want Soil Saviors, it's in the link below. It'll be attached to this video after it posts. All right, so let's get into some good news here. Italy suspends agreement with Israel over Lebanon campaign. Oh, you're thinking, oh, yeah, that's good news to me because people are starting to say, hold on, how is this little country able to get away with bloody murder, quite literally, all the way around, but the rest of us can't? You know, we're brought before the Hague if anybody ever thought about doing any of this stuff. So anyway, I'm glad, you know, kudos to Italy and Spain, you know, for you guys standing up. So I'm calling that good news. Yeah, you know, as a former soldier, y'all, you know, those of us that are thinkers are anti-war. Anti-war in every, like Ben Franklin said, there's never been a good war or a bad peace. And right now we're fighting unnecessary wars. And if you listen to the latest things that are going over, we got more troops going over there. We even have Trump reaching out to the automakers like it's World War II for crying out loud. I don't know. Should I call him Trump or Nebuchadnezzar? I don't know which, because both of them went crazy. Both of them went crazy. I don't know. I don't know, son. Maybe he will transform into a beast in the field.
Well, he may have made that transformation to the false prophet. It's interesting. The beast will turn on the whore. Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens. Right now, I don't like what I see happening. But anyway, that's good news. So here's the next one. Gut Health Elixir. Ancient ferments meet modern science in a glass. In a nutshell, folks, I could sit here and break down this article, but look, what they're encouraging you to do is drink as many fermented things as possible, and they recommend kefir and kombucha. But we also ferment the living daylights out of cabbage, you name it. If it comes out of the ground, if we got too much of it, we freeze dry. I'll give you another preparedness little hack that we've been doing for years and years. Folks, we haven't waited before the crisis to begin. We've been at this for almost as long as William has been alive. And he's over 30 now. So we've been doing this for as long as he's been a baby. What we do, and now that we have a freeze dryer, we will freeze dry entire meals. Because if you find yourself, and I'm sure Stefan, if you can recall, going into our extra room up here, he's probably looking around like, my goodness, man, you've got preparedness. You're taking it to the next level. Well, there's a reason for that. Is the cool thing about a freeze dryer is that it's really handy with your harvest. So let's say you got a bunch of stuff that came in and let's say you're going to can some of it. Okay, cool. You go through that first. I don't even fool with the freeze dried stuff unless we get to a position where I have to. And that's like emergency stuff because I put entire meals out there. But in this article, they're talking about kefir and kombucha. Yeah, you can store that stuff for a while, but you can also store a lot of fermented and all you need is salt. You can ferment pretty much anything coming out of your garden that I can think of. At least it's popping in my cabeza right now. I mean, your mom even made some, and it was awesome, man. Some fermented, what do you call that? She liked the real, real strong stuff. I like the lightly fermented stuff, but she fermented a bunch of salsa and it worked. Oh, yeah. So not only do you have the benefit of the salsa now, I won't be letting that stuff go 2 weeks next time. She dug it, but man, I wasn't really feeling it. The stuff she let go for a week was perfect for me. So we'll have to mix it up. We'll have to do a 2 week version and I don't know why so many women love those salt and vinegar chips, but man, things that are highly astringent and stuff like that, the worse it is, the more she likes it.
One of the best things I've ever had was fermented shredded pumpkin out at Jeff Lawton's farm. There was a raw vegan guy there who was constantly fermenting everything. And one of the best things I had there was like fermented shredded pumpkin. And when I first tried it, I was like, or when I was about to try it, I was like, man, I'm being polite. Like, I don't know if this is going to turn out very well. And then I ate too much of it. I'll put it that way. I ate too much doggone fermented pumpkin. And it was amazing.
Well, that's how, you know, the ancients did it forever in a day, man. If they had a harvest to put back, they didn't have freeze dryers back in the day. That's how they did it. And honestly, the cool thing about that, if you check out the work of Dr. Jack Cruz, who I had the pleasure of meeting down in El Salvador, you know, that's the one thing that you can do through the winter months when you're in accordance with his circadian diet, I guess I'll put it that way, is that when you ferment it, basically you're capturing sunlight in that jar. So that's the cool thing about all the fermented stuff out there, folks. And honestly, it was a way for a lot of people to get through hard times when they weren't in the middle of a growing season. So think about that fermentation out there. Here's the last one. The green powerhouse you might be missing. Arugula's incredible benefits. Now, clearly it's got vitamin A, C, K, folate, calcium, magnesium, all that wonderful stuff. Folks, I eat it every single day. We grow it in the high tunnel. And through the winter, sometimes, you know, I got to go out there. We pretty much got ourselves through the winter this time, but we needed to plant more. I should have had more of it out there. But yeah, I mean, arugula, incredible health benefits out there. And if you can grow it locally, folks, you don't need a whole lot of land to grow this stuff. You can be doing it at your own place. To a certain extent, you can even do it in the windowsill. So between the microgreens I'm getting out there, the arugula, the spinach, the kale, the chard, I mean, you name it, I'm getting it all every single day, and it's coming. And then, of course, you know, the rosemary, thyme, and oregano, that I put that in there as well. So I'm having a super salad every single day. And folks, it's not that difficult to do. So make sure you check it out. All right, with that said, I'm going to go to my man. Hopefully, I don't know if Eric sent the latest one yet, but we'll give it a shot. If it was one from last time, oh well. Everybody You're can welcome. Hear it.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, awake but not active. We hear a lot of people say that people need to wake up for things to change, but being awake doesn't mean you take action. I see plenty of people saying the right things online or in conversation, but it's like they are all waiting for permission to act. I get it. No one wants to be the first body through the door and get cut down, but surely we've sent thousands, if not millions, of bodies through the door already, and plenty are getting cut down on both sides of the door. So the real question is, what will it take for people en masse to act? Starvation? Will that even do it? And what type of action will that even be? At this point, it seems like the world ending is a flip of the coin. Something massive has to change to right the ship. A small adjustment isn't going to do anything. A vote, an election, another war, another regime change, another false flag, all of that just keeps things going in one direction. It's mass control of the population or something else. I don't know what that something else is, but I aim to find out. A permaculture design life is the only life I want, no matter the state of this world. If that means hiding out in the highlands, then so be it. I've had enough safety, security, and comfort for one life. It will not be the prison I willingly walk into. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. If you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of this PimpCast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information or to support my permaculture community group, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog. And once again, man, it's kind of like tied into the show here. You know, sadly, I've talked about it before and being something of a historian. I mean, sadly, folks, I mean, nobody likes to hear what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it just the same. And when you hit a level of depravity, I don't care if it was the Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, every empire, all the way up to the modern day. And if you think America isn't an empire, well, ask yourself, is there another empire that ever had 900 bases in 130 countries? Yeah, we are an empire, and we are an empire in decline. You know, it took the Romans roughly 2,000 years. I'm talking from the Etruscans to the Roman kings to the Roman Republic and then ultimately the Roman Empire. It essentially took them 2,000 years, what we're doing in 250 years as a nation. So, wow, they all crumble. And you can see it right now when you see expansion. There's a if you want to see it in detail, there's an article called Schumpeter's Rome. And you can go to lewrockwell.com and go read that article. And it gives you an overlay of all the things that happened in ancient Rome and how it's happening right now in the United States of Amnesia. And point by point by point, you can see them all line up. So in a nutshell, I guess I could have summed up everything I just said by saying, when you hit this level of depravity in the West, the only known cure is the crucible of really hard times. And the most modern example I can provide is the Roaring Twenties. Had a chicken in every pot. Everybody was living high on the hog. Bam! 29 rolls around. Great Depression. You had, even though you had 90% living rurally and 10% in the cities, we still lost 8 to 10 million people during that time, and nobody ever talks about it. Well, now those numbers are flopped. We got 90% living in the city, 10% in the country, and of that 10% that live in the country, less than 1% of those people are even close to being sufficient, self-sufficient. And most are not. So imagine all that happens all over again. What do you think happens? But sadly, history proves that it requires the crucible of really hard times to straighten out a population that becomes this depraved. And folks, sadly, to Eric's rhetorical question, I suppose, that's the only way to fix it. And by the way, son, I'll have to email you the thing Eric sent me. He's involved in that little project you and I are talking about I'm not going to publicly talk about it just yet. But anyway, Eric has, I mean, brilliant ideas all the way around. And anything he puts his hands on, y'all, is absolute gold as far as I'm concerned. So real, real blessing to be able to call him my friend. All right, y'all, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. I mean, good night. If you don't have one, you might want to think about it now with what's going on in the world. I've been a journeyman electrician for almost 30 years now. And folks, I mean, things aren't improving. So if things go kaput and you're out on the road, they make them for your car. They make them for your home. And by the way, the number one threat to your home is lightning. And if anything gets past this thing on your house, they're going to cover you for 25 G's. Find me another transient voltage surge suppressor out there that can do that, and I'll buy it. You ain't going to find it, and nobody provides you a guarantee like that. So EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Now, let me tell you what inspired today's program. It's the latest thing that's come down. Now, we had a refinery down there in Texas, went, you know, up in flames. Nobody seemed to have an explanation for that. But the latest one that just happened, and it's making news today, is the one that just happened in Australia. There's only two refineries in Australia, only two. And the larger of the two just inexplicably just caught a blaze. I guess they just had that a coming. They just went ablaze. No reason. They're going to be down for the foreseeable future. Now they're down to one. Australia was already in a bad way because all that oil not coming out of the Strait of Hormuz. Now Australia, along with a number of others that just seem to have all these accidents just happening right on cue. Folks, if you believe all this stuff is organic, then you need to be wrapped in the head with a tack hammer. Straighten out some good sense in you. All of this stuff is being orchestrated. If you check out the work of people like Michael Yon, probably without a doubt, the most, I don't have a whole lot of subscriptions on Substack, but his is one of them. And I'm glad to pay for that information. because there is not another analyst out there that has been more on the money than Michael Yon, spelled Y-O-N. He's got a YouTube channel and he's got a Substack. And he's called every bit of this long before. He said from the very beginning, everything that has happened. And he's not doing it from a computer. He's actually boots on the ground in all these places and said, if I were a psychopath, what would I do? And that's exactly what he's been calling. So he and former Navy SEAL, Michael Yon was former Green Beret. You have, Navy SEAL. I can't think of his name right now. Matt Bracken. Those two guys together have been calling this stuff up one side and down the other. And what are they telling you? They're telling you, in a nutshell, get your house in order. Because the food system is fragile, y'all, and we're here to provide the proof. Not that a lot of you that are listening right now need an explanation of this, but we're going to cover it just the same. That's why people in Australia, if you think it's bad right now, even if things started flowing today, they're already in a terrible bind, not just there, but so many other island nations all throughout the planet, all throughout the earth. Japan, take for example, Japan, one of our best allies, right? They just made a little side deal with Iran saying, we're going to buy our own stuff from you guys. We're going to make our own deal and we're going to pay in yuan, Chinese currency, whatever you demand. We got to have it. So many others got to have it too. We got all of our so-called allies jumping ship, and can you blame them? So, folks, we're talking about a fragility that isn't easily corrected. This is why we've been doing the shows we have, to beat it in everybody's head out there that you better get your poop in a group, if you know what I'm talking about. So right off the bat, you got 3 to 5 days grocery store inventory. That's all most cities have before the shelves go empty. I'm dead serious. Ask me how I know up close and personal, because that manufactured hurricane they brought through Western North Carolina, well, heavens to Murgatroyd. You saw that in a big way in all these places around here. First of all, they didn't have power. Then when they did get it back on, there was still nothing moving in and out of this place. And you saw the shelves. And strangely enough, despite it being a hurricane, what was the first to go, son? You want to take a whack at what was the first to go?
Cell phones.
No. In terms of grocery stores.
Toilet paper and paper towels, probably.
Damn. Right on the money. Toilet paper and paper towels. I'm like, are you kidding me? I hope you got teeth in your butt, because I don't know what you're going to do, because you're running out. I mean, it was the first to go. They were wiped out, toilet paper and paper towels. I'm like, I don't even know what planet I live in. You can go out there and get mullein off the ground out here. It grows everywhere. Wipe your keister with that. I mean, poop in a bucket throws, carbon on top of it. But that's what people were spending their money on. Okay, you ain't going to make it if that's where your preparedness mindset is. But that's my number one right there.
It also makes you wonder what people went through in order to make, like, toilet paper a number one thing that they need to prep on. Like, what nasty things occurred during COVID for them to never forget this. There was an estate sale in Texarkana that I went to, and in the master bedroom, like, walk-in closet, every single shelf, top to bottom, was all stored with toilet paper and paper towels. Like, this old lady was never going through whatever she went through before. But the next one
to that point, son, toilet paper up until about 70 years ago was considered an extreme luxury. People would take the Sears catalog. In fact, when I was a kid, where I grew up, there was seven kids being raised by my grandmother while my mom and dad were in the slammer. Okay. There were times we had to wipe with the Sears Roebuck catalog. I'm dead serious. And you didn't flush the toilet because, I mean, look, I'll just go ahead and talk about this. Multiple people took a bath in the same water, and you didn't flush until somebody did a number two. That's exactly how it was when I was a kid, when I was a very small kid growing up. A lot of people don't know what that's like. And I got a feeling you may find out real soon, but go ahead, son. Sorry to cut you off.
And I also advocate for bidets. Just delete the whole paper towel or toilet paper thing in general and actually be clean and get a bidet. That's what I advocate for. It ain't gay. It's clean. That's what it is. The next thing I would bring up is the centralized distribution. Like all of the food in the United States is transported by just a handful of companies, and that all run on diesel. And it's not like a lot of these companies are transporting the food via train. A lot of these, like, just go to I-30, go to I-40, go to any of these interstates, and it is packed with semis. Like I-30, it's a nightmare to just for me to get to from DeKalb to Mount Pleasant because of the amount of semis that are on the road. And diesel right now is past $5 here in Texas. So if all that shuts down, there's no more food being delivered. And it only takes a handful of companies. And like between here and Mount Pleasant, you'll see an occasional like mom and pop company and stuff like that. But most of the time it's going to be what, like Swift, Pop Warner. And then there's like another one that, I think they're based out of Arkansas, but there's only a handful of large trucking companies that control a large majority of the trucking industry. And if those shut down, even if there is food being grown, it ain't getting delivered.
Yeah, good point here. So that kind of ties into what I'm talking about, but I'm also going to provide you a solution here, one I've actually just spoke about a moment ago. There's only a handful of mega processing plants that handle the majority of meat. I worked at one in Oklahoma when I was an apprentice electrician, and I think it was called Lopez Meats. Folks, if you ever, and they were processing all the patties that go to McDonald's and places like that. Folks, if you saw how that's done, believe me, you would never eat at any of these big chains ever again. But yeah, they handle the majority of meat. But one national disruption, let's say, okay, we had all these chicken processing facilities go up ablaze, and I guess they had that a coming. Well, what happens if, you know, it's so we're not decentralized in anything here. Prime example. The reason why Iran is so effective is because they have a decentralized military. And you take off the head of the snake, well, it doesn't matter. They go deep and deep and deep and deep. And if they lose all communications, they don't have a centralized place. That's what makes them so effective. Joel Salatin has talked about it in so many examples of how you have just one of these major meat processing plants go down, then a lot of these store shelves and the trucks that deliver them that William was just talking about, it ain't even going to get to that point. All you need to do is make ablaze a number of these key facilities and you're done. So that takes you back to why you really ought to be at Mountain Readiness learning how to process your own animals. Because I teach you a method that works. I'm going to show you on a sheep, but it works no matter the animal. So I don't care if you got a Cuda Monday to a bear. It doesn't matter. These methods work no matter what. That's why I'm teaching this stuff. But you're just one major processor away of being brought down. And think about it. If things go sideways enough, you better believe if you're the enemy of the United States of Amnesia, they know exactly where all these pressure points are, and you better believe they're going to get them done. So that's my next one.
The next one I have is just a singular extreme weather event. If what happened in North Carolina with Hurricane Helene happened in like the breadbasket of the United States, where it's a lot more flat and water was spread out fast, like a larger scale, we'll see the effects of it in a year. But that's how, like, we only have a year before we see those effects, and it'll completely destroy, because it's all one crop. Like, it's either soy, it's either corn, and surprisingly, very, very little of it is actually wheat. Yeah, it all it takes is like one, and they don't have any diversity. Like, go look at mainstream agriculture. They don't have any kind of diversity. They don't have any earthwork set in place to accommodate for any extreme weather events that may occur. So all it takes is like one extreme weather event, and it doesn't even have to be that extreme. It could just be in an unusual place or in a place that doesn't happen very often, or it could be, like we've seen pretty frequently here often, like an intentional wildfire, an intentionally started wildfire. What happens when what happened in California happens in the breadbasket, or where a lot of our grains are being produced, or where a lot of our cows are being, you know, grazed and things like that. That's all it takes to shut it down. It's not a permanent shutdown, but it's long enough for people to definitely suffer and die from it and starve from it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And on the heels of what we were saying a moment ago, Deanne puts out here, I live and work by the Houston Ship Channel, numerous shipyards and refineries. And you want to talk about big rigs on the road? It's insane down here. Yeah. And all you need to do is take one of those down. take a couple of them down. I mean, it's crazy down there. I mean, refinery after refinery after refinery. I mean, all with combustible materials. Yeah. That goes haywire, man. You got a problem with that, which brings me into my next one, fuel dependency. Think about this, folks. I brought it up before and I've talked about it before. Max Egan, the great Max Egan, who just happened to be kicked off of Twitter right now. Anyway, you can find him over there on Rumble. One of the best thinkers out there. Look, we're all truckitarians. You dig what I'm saying? No diesel, no tractors, no transport, no food. That's when you get down to brass tacks. And I got news for you. Most farms out there, you don't have diesel, you ain't operating that farm. Folks, we do everything on this farm with a BMW. Boots made for walking. And I mean, just about everything is done that way, except for getting up the driveway, which all could be done by hand in a pinch. That's why Jeff Lawton, when he had talked about it years ago, and somebody asked him about Joel Salatin's place, and he said, yeah, you know, they're just a little heavy on, you know, petro, but that's not something he's heavily dependent on. You don't have diesel, and not just Joel. I'm not picking on Joel, but I'm saying a lot of other farms like his and a number of others, you don't have fuel in the way that we need it. These farms can't even operate without that happening. Now, Joel is clever enough. I'm sure they'd find some horses somewhere and drag this stuff from where it needed to go, if it came to that. But not most farms aren't even thinking or even slightly set up for anything like that. So, yeah, fuel dependency, that is a massive one right there.
Now, on Joel's part, the only system that he has that would be really affected from not being able to have access to petroleum would be his pig operation. His cows, his sheep, his chickens, to an extent, he would have to scale down his chickens, but all of those would be just fine without petroleum. Not really,
because his hay production that he does out there, the chickens, he owns the place where they produce the chicken food. It's got to get from A to B. It is heavily dependent on petro.
I forgot about the hay. Yeah, he does overwinter in the barn. Yeah, I did forget about that. The next one I have is just outside input heavy. All of our food systems are all, even the small scale food systems, like go check your neighbor's backyard. All of these systems are outside input heavy. Like if the fertilizer, like we're about to find out here soon, fertilizer, they don't get that, they ain't growing crops because there are no nutrients in the soil left because they've killed all the biology. Water, a lot of these places irrigate heavily. Transportation, you know, collecting the crop, every processing crop, all of these systems are heavily outside input heavy. Most of these farms don't even seed their farm themselves, which is wild. They outsource that. They outsource even the fertilization of their farm. Really, a lot of things, the only thing that a lot of these farmers do is till the ground and sometimes and harvest the crop whenever it's ready. And we call that farming now. And we there's even people who are arrogant about calling that part farming. And it's insane. But it's all outside input heavy. If the outside input stop coming in, then all these farms are going to go fallow and shut down immediately.
Yeah, I'm going to say the next one here is going to be weather extremes. And I got to bring this up because of what we just experienced here in the mountains in Western North Carolina just a year and a half ago. But you got floods, you got droughts, you got freezes, and they can wipe out an entire region because of how we're so heavily leveraged in monocrops on everything. I was talking at the top of the show about how if you go down to Hendersonville, where not about an hour from where I live right here, if you go down to Apple Country down there, I mean, good night. Like I said, one freeze will wipe out because you have a monocrop. You don't have an early, mid, and late of everything. Well, some places do, but by and large, we can wipe out an entire region just with a freeze, a drought, a flood coming at the wrong time or the right time if you're the powers that shouldn't be. And when they're dropping this garbage over us, I mean, it does it seem a coincidence that all of a sudden Bill Gates just came out the other day with a aluminum-resistant seed? So if they're not spraying this stuff from the sky, why would you need an aluminum? Because aluminum is not found in the air column naturally, okay? In case anybody didn't know that. And then there was some hoople-headed broad on with Redacted podcast yesterday. I wanted to reach through there and strangle this lady because she's saying, well, the problem is they're pulling all this aluminum up every time they till the soil. Yeah, a little bit, but that's not where they're measuring it. Well, they're measuring it in the soil. And also, aluminum does not deposit itself on the surface. That is done through chemtrailing. That is done through geoengineering. And it's done, and all of a sudden, you know, Bill Gates has aluminum-resistant seeds. Look, I didn't just step out of the cotton fields, y'all, and I'm sure a lot of you didn't either. This stuff is being done on purpose, and they are engineering these events in so many different ways. Dane Wigington at geoengineeringwatch.org has all the goods on all of this stuff, y'all. They are dropping this crap on us, and they are doing it for a reason. And Jack Cruz even talked about it and his, you know, his brand of why they're doing it. It is making us dumber. And honestly, we got health conditions flying off the charts right now. And a lot of it has to do with what they're dumping in these skies right now. So folks, you better stand up and, you know, how do I say it? I mean, you better stand up and fight this corruption or you're going to fall asleep drinking the hemlock.
Also on that aluminum note, it's a completely different type of aluminum than what's present in the soil. What's present in the soil isn't a heavy metal aluminum. That's not even the same type of aluminum that's present in the soil. So if you were to kick up the aluminum that's in the soil and then it falls out and there's fallout from it, it's going to be a completely different type of aluminum than what they're spraying in the skies. What they're spraying in the skies does not naturally occur in our soils. That's absolutely crazy. The next one I have, though, is global trade. Like, our food system is 100% dependent on global trade. Like, go to the grocery store. How many of your food products come from Mexico, are grown in Mexico, are processed in Mexico, things like that? How much of our fertilizer is produced in the United States? None of it. All our entire food system, and also our grain, our wheat and stuff, most of our wheat, our rice and stuff like that is not produced in the United States. The corn that's produced here is either going towards fuel or feeding cows. Like, we don't produce. Yeah, there's a lot of agriculture here, but very, very little of it actually goes to feeding directly humans in the United States. A lot of it gets shipped out. Like pigs, for example, they get shipped to China. They get shipped to China to get processed and then shipped back. That is ridiculous.
Insanity.
It's absolutely insane. You're not telling me that's the most efficient route to go or the cheapest route to go. No, and it's not. But a lot, you'll notice that same pattern with a lot of our food systems. We'll grow a small percentage of it here and then ship it out somewhere and sell it as like a goodwill offering or control towards other countries, or we'll ship it out somewhere, it gets processed there, and then it gets shipped back. Or we just don't grow our own food. Even though we have more farmable land than most other countries, we grow very, very little bit of our food, of our own food.
Yeah, and that brings, and that just kind of flows right into what I was about to say next. Global supply chain reliance. I mean, if imports slow down, there's entire categories of food that will not be on the shelf. Take, for example, okay, we're talking about these trucks running. You know, most of the world's helium comes out of that region, comes out of the Persian Gulf. Do you know most of the world's sulfuric acid? Well, you're thinking, well, you know, will he study chemistry? He'll study it no more because what he thought was H2O was H2SO4. Something I learned in chemistry all these years, a little nursery rhyme, okay? Well, if you don't have sulfuric acid, you don't have vulcanization. You don't have rubber. And there's a whole lot of, and that's just one thing. You don't have rubber. You don't have trucks going down the road. You don't have cars going down the road. That's why some people reached out and said, hey, man, you know, what do I do with my money? I never give that kind of advice, but I'm like, hey, man, if you want something, if you need tires on your truck or car or whatever, you better go get it because right now it's about to be a problem. Folks, in my electrical career, I think I've worked in at least 4 different tire plants in Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. I can't even tell you how many different tire plants I've worked in over these years. You don't have sulfuric acid, you ain't got rubber. And that's just a small thing. You don't have helium, you don't have microchips. You don't have the very chips they need to put in all these vehicles that they have out there. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they'll go back and make them good like they used to back in the day. But you have a global supply chain reliance, and some key things are not leaving that Gulf. People are saying, well, I don't live in England, it ain't going to bother me. I don't live in Europe, it ain't going to bother me. Oh, you think so? It may not bother you right now, or maybe even this year, but I got news for you. You're going to see things. They're going to do what they did during COVID, and they're going to stack up multiple of the items that they do have, and the ones that you like, they ain't going to be there. So you better be thinking about this stuff, folks. I'm not here to make you fearful. I'm here to let you know what the mainstream prostitutes on Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, what they're not ever going to tell you. I'm trying to put a fire under your butt to let you know that you better get loose. You better get loose right now on getting the things you need, because even if it went to get, I mean, Pastor Chuck Baldwin was just talking about it in his latest thing. It's like, even if it all kicked on right now, do you have any idea how dreadful things are going to be, at least in the short term, even if it were to kick on right now? And judging by what I see going on right now, they're only escalating things. And don't think for a minute that all these so-called world, I'm not even so sure Iran isn't even in on it. They were in with the whole COVID scam. They were in on that. And you know what? It isn't unlike, I've talked about it in previous podcasts, where we know what happened during, for example, World War I, where all the people involved said, you know what? The people are getting a little bit uppity. We got to knock back our testosterone. Let's have a war. That's essentially what happened. I can give you the whole history on that. And it started with the Milner Group. And I'm not going to go sideways right now. I know William's got one more, but maybe I'll give a history lesson one of these days of what actually happened on World War I, what actually happened in World War II. It's not what they tell you out there, folks. It's entirely different. And with, honestly, I'm going to tell you right now, I think we're in the beginnings of World War III. And just like all the previous wars, they don't ever tell you what the tinderbox was until years later. But I think we're in the middle of World War III right now. Go ahead, son.
All right, so this, well, real quick, one thing that I was just thinking of is I wonder if any of these oil refineries that are on fire right now had any Israeli tech. They did kind of flex a little bit with, what was it, Iran not too long ago and the pagers. First of all, I didn't know people still carried pagers, but that's interesting. I wonder if there's any Israeli tech in any of those refineries. But the last point I have, which is really the only point you need to know in order to, you know, start preparing for supply chain shutdowns, is that the entire food supply is controlled by three massive organizations: BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard.
Vanguard, yep.
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. And they have a horrible track record when it comes to anything ethical. Like, look at everything that they own, look at everything they control, and point out one thing that they produce that is actually healthy for you. You can't find one. You can't find one. And if it is something, if they do have something that is producing something healthy for you, it's just because they recently acquired it and they're in the process of screwing it all up. So there you go. That's my last one.
There you go. We got a couple of questions here. Hey, folks, in the future, if y'all could put them in capital or big letters, it would help. If a person grew moringa in Northeast Pennsylvania Zone 4, would it be possible to get seeds for next year?
It's going to be close. You need about 6 months of solid growth for moringas to start putting on seeds. That being said, you could always just, like, say you're getting close to your first frost date. Just take a couple cuttings, put it in pots, bring it inside, and then it'll be just fine. Like, moringa is another one of those trees that is shockingly easy to propagate. So just take some new growth cuttings, maybe 6 to 8 inches from the tip of the branches, and just put those in soil, root those in soil, and then just keep them over winter. And then once it's, you know, you get past your spring temperatures, put them back outside, and then you have a never ending loop. It's kind of like comfrey. If you do it right, if you plant it right, you never have to buy it again.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. William, can you recommend a good nursery for citrus trees in Texas?
I mean, if you're down by Houston, you have better access to citrus trees than I do. I would check Leg Creek Nursery, L-E-G-G Creek Nursery. I think they're kind of near the Bryant, College Station, Austin triangle there. Check them out. But other than that, yeah, I mean, you probably have better access to it than down in Houston.
All right. Well, folks, that's going to do it for us today. I want to thank everybody that checked us out. Look, I've been steering away to a certain extent of really, really dark shows. Folks, the whole impetus for this thing is what just happened in Australia. You're going to see it keep happening. That's my prediction. It's still going to keep happening. Nobody wants to believe it. But then again, when the Visigoths were kicking in the doors of Rome, nobody wanted to believe that either. You know, they were like, well, man, we've been here 2,000 years. Everybody here in the United States of Amnesia is saying, well, we've been here 250 years. Nothing's ever going to happen, or if they're even thinking about it at all. Folks, I got five more that I didn't even touch on this program. That's, I mean, and all of them are different. There are so many ways in which we are set up to fail right now, but you don't have to be among those. Remember, I said 8 to 10 million died during the Great Depression, but you know, in the next, in what I think is going to be the greatest depression, you don't have to be a casualty out there, y'all. There were people up in these mountains that didn't even know it even happened, didn't even know the Great Depression happened. So, you know the deal. It's getting worse. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive. Channel and nature, the knowledge rings. We'll roots that run deep. Wisdom from sowing, permaculture dreams. Let the ideas uncloud. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling nature's groove. We've got the answers. All we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us. Watch the world spin from the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life. For the magic's alive,